Chase McKay, Michelle Knezevic, Nick Keyser here with you on this Friday. Hope you're having a fantastic day. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, discussing the Tennessee Titans. We'll get back to the Preds in a few minutes, and also your chance to win KISS tickets at the bottom of the hour, as those tickets have just gone on sale. But it'll be awesome that you can still try and win some. But talking about the Titans and the wide receiver position, what they could do in the draft, and I know for me, and Michelle, I'm curious of your answer, and I'm curious of the listener's answer as well. If they don't address this, and I'm not talking about, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh round, somewhere in there. I'm talking about the first three rounds, four rounds, maybe. But I really think that two, three, that day two will be the sweet spot. If they don't address receiver, I'm going to be really upset, because this is a position that I feel like they have not put as much into, not only this offseason with free agency, I haven't done anything with it, but really the last few years outside of drafting Treylon Burks, and you can throw Kyle Phillips in there too, but it's a position group that needs a lot of work. And if they don't do anything with it, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Well, I mean, yeah, considering not only your wide receiver room is very thin, but your tight end room is very thin as well. And when you talk about having weapons for your quarterback or being great around Ryan Tannehill or whoever your quarterback is, you got to have people that he can throw the ball to. And right now, the tight end room, we're looking at Chig Okonkwo, the new guy they just signed, whose name is escaping me, and maybe Jeff Swaim. I'm not sure. So that's very thin, and that's with the expectation that Chig Okonkwo can make the jump from his rookie season, where we wanted to see more of him, but, you know, Todd Downing didn't have him involved in a lot of different things. We wanted to see more of him towards the end of the year. So can he take that next big step? We're assuming he can, right? So there's your tight end room. And then you pair that with a wide receiver room that's Treylon Burks is your number one wide receiver as now. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, you know, his ceiling isn't as high as any of these guys, but he's been in your offense for the last couple of years. He's a good three or four for you. And then Kyle Phillips is a question mark on his health, and Racy McMath, question mark. So, you know, you have to draft somebody, and it can't be somebody in these late rounds. I understand, you know, you found a guy like Chig Okonkwo. You found him in the third round. But you just have to address that position. I mean, they had Robert Woods last year there, who, you know, it ended up being not the best signing, considering he was supposed to be a two to A.J. Brown. But, I mean, we're also expecting that Treylon Burks can live up to being a number one wide receiver in his second year, when he's going to be one of the only true threats out there on the field, Chase. So, yeah, when you talk about addressing this in the draft, I mean, it's a must. Nothing happened in free agency. And if they don't, then you better be making a big trade for somebody out there after the draft, because you don't want a bunch of other just, you know, practice squad guys who get moved up. And then, or if that's happening, then I don't know. Your team is in two different positions, because you still have a Ryan Tannehill and a Derrick Henry in a good defense, but you'd be in the same position you were in last year when it came to the offense.
Yeah, and they can't allow that to happen. I mean, look, I'm not expecting them to make leaps and bounds improvements with the offense based on some of the moves that they've made, you know, to this point. But they got to have guys that are going to catch the ball. It's simple as that. And, you know, the tight end room is you know, another one that they obviously have to address. And I feel like they will, but they've also, there's been times like last year, I thought they could have done more, you know, at certain spots, and they didn't. And so that's why, and you know, you got to let the draft play out. You mentioned trade, which is interesting, because I think I would sign up for that if it's the right person. You know, I'm not one of those people that's subscribing to Odell Beckham and, you know, trying to sign him. I just don't think he'd fit here. with Vrabel and the culture and all that, but they certainly have to do something. Jonathan Hutton, this was him on Caroline Willie and D Mace on Wednesday discussing wide receivers on the Titans' radar.
But a lot of teams meet with a lot of guys. How much do you really look into the guys that the Titans are meeting with?
I think it makes a lot of sense for Hooker and the Titans to pair up here in this draft. I'll start by saying that. But keep in mind, all the meeting reports, like Hooker was the first player to meet with the Titans, or the Titans were the first team to meet with Hooker whenever Hooker was at the Senior Bowl. But he can meet with all 32, and all 32 should take the opportunity to chat with every single player there. There's not a limit on that. Combine, different story based on, of course, his knee, and based on location. This visit doesn't count against their number of visits that they can have in the facility because he's the in-state prospect. So they should use all avenues to chat with him and figure out everything, put him on the board, make sure he's a match with Kelly and everything else. But I read into the visits because, and especially the guys who are mocked to go like third to sixth round, because at that point, I think teams are more likely and high probability that they go with the player that matches who they are and the personality and the traits that fit the organization, the coaching staff, the head coach, the general manager, more so than the first or second round picks where, oh, he's the highest guy on our board. By the time the third round rolls around, you go all over the place with projections because it's very difficult to figure out which position of need meets the quality of the football player for that team.
Jonathan Hutton from Outkick. That might have been the wrong clip, but talking about team visits, because that's going to tell the story over the course of the next, few weeks of, guys that come to the facility that they can meet with, and they've met with guys at the combine and pro days and stuff like that. But those visits, though, that interaction that you get between the coaches and the player, the position coaches, that's going to be huge. As they go through this evaluation process before they get to the draft.
100% Chase. And we had a text. We have a texter text in. They didn't text their name, but I think they have an interesting point here. They said, "Longtime listener, first time texter." Well, thanks for texting in.
Oh,
This
nice.
is obviously not a strong wide receiver class, but it seems to be one of the strongest tight end classes in a long time. Why wouldn't the Titans consider one of these tight ends? Try to find a guy like Kelce or Kittle. Well, Kittle was a late find for the 49ers, but I will say this, Chase. Junie Riddle put this guy on my radar. I knew about him at Georgia. Darnell Washington. He is a 6'7", 270-pound tight end. He can be, he's a great in his scouting report. As a blocker, he is elite, an elite run blocker. You can easily mistake him for a seasoned pulling guard. I look at this guy. He was really successful at Georgia. I mean, if you remember watching him this year, the guy was huge out there. I mean, just saying, he's a 6'7" tight end, right? A guy who can block really well in his senior year, or not senior year, in his last year at Georgia. He had over 400. Oh, here we go. Played 13 games, had 26 catches for 417 yards, averaged 16 yards per catch, two TDs. So, I mean, this was a guy who was really, really productive. And I know a lot of our attention has been on to the wide receiver group, especially because they traded off AJ Brown and, all of the spotlight on Treylon Burks last year being their first round pick. But I also look at the tight end room needing a lot of other help too. And I look at a guy like Darnell Washington, who's a second to third round pick type of guy who could be, a really good weapon and also, a good blocker on that offensive line, Chase.
Yeah, and when I read the profile on him on Pro Football Focus, that's exactly what it says. His play style, a six offensive lineman with ball skills, and is projected to go early in day two. I like the Washington pick. I think that would be good. Another one is Dalton Kincaid from Utah. Now he's more of a wide receiver, built like a tight end. But again, I think either one, you would certainly consider that a good pick. And he's projected to go early day two as well. Luke Musgrave is another one from Oregon State that's been mentioned that could potentially go at the end of the first round or early in the second round. And then, you know, Michael Mayer from Notre Dame is projected to go in the first round. But I think tight end is certainly a position that they can't ignore either, along with wide receivers. 615-737-1025. Mike, hang tight. We'll get to your call coming up next. And if you want to weigh in on the conversation, 615-737-1025. It's Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter Nick Keyser with you on this Friday, 615-737-1025, discussing the Titans and the receiver position, tight end position, what they're going to do in the draft to address that. You can call or text on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And let's go back to the phones and say hello to Mike in Gallatin, who wants to weigh in on wide receivers. Mike, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? So, Chase, I got two thoughts. The first thing, I haven't heard a lot of chatter about Kyle Phillips here lately. Again, we used a mid-round draft pick on him, and I know that he got hurt, and I feel like that's the unfortunate notion that was a lot of the draft picks you've had here in the last couple of years, is that he's going to be put on Vrabel's quote-unquote, we'll call it crap list for the sake of radio, to where, like, this year his moment shines. Because I think what we haven't talked about is kick returner, punt returner, and that spot needs to get filled. And I know that we tend to go the wide receiver route for that, but we have to fill that with the draft pick if Kyle Phillips is the answer too. So are we thinking that this is the year that Kyle Phillips can and hopefully he can show? Because he showed promise there for like one or two games that he started with, not returning the ball, but again, like, catching the ball. He had a couple of games. I feel like he showed that he could really be a good contributor to the team. And then my second thought with the tight end, the only concern I have with us going after like a top end tight end is I don't want to take away with what Chig Okonkwo already started doing. I think we could see a monster year out of him if we let him, you know, open up the playbook to use him a lot more often. Like, he could be that threat that we're missing if we let him have a chance. I just don't want to draft another high profile guy who isn't going to compliment Chig. Let Chig have a shot.
Thanks, that's a very good point. Thanks, Mike. I think on both of those, it you know, on Kyle Phillips and on Chig, it's just, what is this offense under Tim Kelly going to look like? You know, I think we all hope and pray and feel that it's going to take steps in the right direction from what Todd Downing was doing, and that he's going to use these guys more. Now, Kyle Phillips is different. Kyle Phillips was hurt a majority of the year, so we really have no idea what he is. We just haven't seen enough. But, you know, to his point on Chig Okonkwo, I understand that. I mean, you still have to address tight ends. So rather than just getting, you know, some slappy to put in there, I would like, you know, them to put some thought into it and get, you know, a talented player, but then make Chig, you know, the number one tight end. I certainly believe that he's capable of doing that. But I think it's an interesting question by Mike on both of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the Chig Okonkwo one first. I definitely think what we saw from him last year was really promising, but just because that's what we saw, you know, doesn't mean that he will be the number one tight end if they don't go out and get somebody else. You know, if I don't think drafting a guy is taking an opportunity away from Chig Okonkwo, because you need to create depth at that position. And honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing a little two tight end scheme for the Tennessee Titans out there. And they've had success in it in the past, Ryan Tannehill. So when you look at it from that perspective, I don't think it's giving up on Chig or anything. That room is so thin right now that they need more players, and players that, you know, can develop and be a part of this roster for the next couple of years, not just going and getting guys that are Band-Aid solutions just for the time being. And, you know, the Kyle Phillips situation, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he was the star of training camp. We went into training camp and everyone was really excited to see Treylon Burks, that, you know, he would be that number one wide receiver. And Kyle Phillips kind of came out of nowhere, right? UCLA guy, I think he was a sixth rounder. And turned a lot of heads in training camp. Ryan Tannehill and him created a great connection, and he was the main guy in that first Giants game when they were trying to come back and win the game. And they had the 2-minute drill down the field. I mean, it was Tannehill to Phillips. You could clearly tell that they had the most chemistry on the field. He was a fast slot guy, but the caller was right. I mean, you need to find somebody who can be consistent and punt returns. He had the muffed one out there, and then they couldn't figure out that position for a while. But the unfortunate truth is, and Vrabel said this at his end-of-year press conference, is, well, they drafted Kyle Phillips to do both of those. And I actually think that was a really good pick, except he gets hit by, you know, he gets hit and hurt in the first game, and you never see him again. I think he could have been really effective for this team as a slot guy, as a speedy dude. But when you're a slot guy, you're getting hit by linebackers, and he already is undersized. And although, yes, he muffed the punt, we saw him do a bunch in practice, and it was really successful. He was a speedy guy, and I think also in the preseason game, if I'm not yep. mistaken. But, you know, there was a six-round pick that you hit on, but he got hurt, and then he never came back. I mean, and we didn't hear anything about him all season, Chase. So what about Kyle Phillips? I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what his health looks like. Can he put on some weight that can, you know, help him try to stay healthy out there? But that's just still a question mark.
Yeah, and I mean, he's going to have to. Because I, you know, you mentioned it was actually the fifth round that they took him. But okay. Still, that you know, that's a guy that you're trying to get something out of. I mean, just because you pick a guy past the fourth round, you know, yes, there's more of a, I guess, chance that they won't work out. But I know that in talking to people last year when they drafted him, you know, a lot of people were really excited about that pick. Even the owner. I ran into Amy Adams Strunk at an event and said, "Hey, love your draft." And she goes, "I really like Kyle Phillips, the kid from UCLA." And I said, I think I'm going to like him too. Speedy little receiver, can play the slot, has, you know, return elements in his game. But like you said, he got hurt. And so how much work has he put into the offseason? What's he going to look like when they report to training camp, or actually even before that in the, you know, offseason activities? We don't know, but we're going to find out very soon. But if you draft a guy and Phillips can still be a part of the equation. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but because they obviously just need more depth at that position than they have right now.
I agree. So it's will he be healthy? You know, he had a whole year because we didn't see him after that first game. And I think he 100% will be a part of the equation, right? These are the guys that you want to be able to hit on in the later rounds that can be solid players for you and help with that depth at the wide receiver room or the tight end room or whatever position we may be talking about. And guys that you drafted and you developed and who started within your organization, you want to get a lot of years out of them. I'm excited to see Kyle Phillips because he was so fun to watch in training camp. I remember, you know, he was the guy we were talking about. Oh my gosh, he's so fast and he's returning punts, and him and Ryan Tannehill have already created such a great connection on the practice field. But it's football, and it stinks to see that somebody's injured, especially this organization having so much trouble with injured players, you know, year in and year out. But I still look and I still go back to the same sentiment, Chase. I'm still concerned if Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is your number one wide receiver, your most veteran wide receiver in this group, because you look at it, and in combination of Treylon Burks, Kyle Phillips, and Racy McMath, have they all played? I mean, I don't even think if you combine the amount of games they've played, it's more than a full NFL season.
Well, I hate to tell you that might be the case, because as I look at it right now, I mean, Kenny Golladay and Robbie Anderson are still out there. I don't want anything to do with either one of those guys. So I'm not interested. Randall Cobb is probably just waiting on Rodgers and where to go.
They're going to New York.
Julio Jones, been there, done that. The one that I would be open to, maybe, even though I don't think I think his best days are behind him. But when you talk about a veteran guy and like a good guy to have in the locker room, Jarvis Landry would be interesting.
Yeah, he would.
I'd, I'd be cool with Juice if he's 30, was with the Saints last year, so he's somebody that you could potentially look at. Sammy Watkins is still out there, but he's not very good at this point. So there's not a ton of options unless they go trade route, which I guess they potentially could do. I mean, you could see that at the draft or right before that, maybe they try and trade for a receiver, but they've done that the last 2 years and it hasn't worked. So I wonder how gun shy they might be when it comes to that, because unless it's Mike Evans.
Which I am on the Mike Evans train.
I would take Mike Evans if you could figure out how to work that deal. And
D-Hop, I'm on the Mike Evans over DeAndre Hopkins, but I don't think I would be fully against DeAndre Hopkins. And I'll add one more thing to that layer. I don't have an issue with the wide receiver room being the way it is if you decide to draft a rookie quarterback and move off of Ryan Tannehill. But if Ryan Tannehill is your quarterback and Derrick Henry is still on the roster, I look at this team and I look at what the organization is telling the fans is, we're still in a go-for-it mode. So that's what concerns me without having a veteran wide receiver in that room. But if they move off Tannehill or Henry, or make some drastic move and decide to go get a rookie quarterback, it doesn't bother me as much, Chase.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that that's a good evaluation, but this is just we got a few more weeks of this, and then the picture is going to get a little clearer, even though I don't know if we'll see the full picture after the draft. I mean, I still think there will be moves for Rand Carthon to make. All right, let's have some fun here on a Friday. This is something that I used to do way back in the day, but we're going to have, let's load them up, load up the line, 615-737-1025, because it's your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Kiss at Bridgestone Arena on October 23rd. They're fantastic live. Tickets just went on sale about 27 minutes ago, but you're going to have to earn them. We're going to give whoever gets in first the opportunity to hear a piece of a Kiss song played backwards, and you have to say which song it is. This is always a lot of fun, so we're going to do that. But load up the line, 615-737-1025. Your chance to win Kiss tickets. Coming up next on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter, Nick Keiser with you. 615-737-1025, your chance to win Kiss tickets. Coming up October 23rd at Bridgestone Arena, but you must participate and get on the line. Nick is going to play a Kiss song backwards, and you have to guess what song that is. And we've done this several times over the years. I did this several years ago. It's always entertaining and always fun. So Michelle, how familiar are you? Actually, both of you, are y'all into Kiss at all? No,
not particularly. I think I probably know a couple of their songs, but I won't be there. And I don't know if I'll be able to guess any of these, honestly.
That's okay. All right. Are we ready? Nick, are you ready?
Yep, let's roll.
All right. Ray is first up. Ray, welcome in. How big of a Kiss fan are you?
Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you doing? Younger, I was a big Kiss fan. Have seen them a handful of times in concert, so this would be cool.
Okay, so you feel confident in this?
Semi-confident.
Okay. Let's DJ Nick, take it away with the first song, about 3 or 4 seconds.
You got it, Ray.
All right. Do you know what it is?
Heaven's on Fire.
That is correct.
Ding, 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 ding.
Wow, first one. Gets
all right.
It.
Congratulations, all right, Ray.
That was easy. I thought this might take a little bit. Ray, we'll put you on hold, get your info. Just like that, right off the bat. I thought that's what it was too. So I won ticket two,
Chase. Yay.
I wish. I'd love to see Kiss again. October 23rd, Bridgestone Arena. Tickets went on sale earlier this morning, so you can get them that way. And they put on a great show. So the first time I saw Kiss, they were co-headlining with Def Leppard. And Def Leppard is fantastic.
What a duo.
I've seen them multiple times. I saw them this summer at Nissan Stadium with Motley Crue. It was supposed to be with Poison, too, and Bret Michaels ended up in the hospital, unfortunately. But Joan Jett was there, and Def Leppard puts on a great show. But I saw Kiss with Def Leppard, and they were awesome. And then I saw them again several years later that they were headlining their own tour, and I forgot who opened for them. It was somebody big. Maybe it was Poison. But they're awesome. Gene does the whole breathing fire thing and spitting fire and blood, and it's intense. It's a production basically, but they have the face, wear the face paint, Paul Stanley, the Starman. So it'll be a good show, for sure. So love the participation, having a little fun here on a Friday, and congrats to Ray for being able to win those tickets. We've talked a lot about the Preds today and just kind of the feeling that the fan base has right now with watching these young kids. And, Nick put the stat up. You brought it up. $38 million that has been out of the lineup with all the injuries that they've had. And then, of course, even before that, trading away a lot of key players. But they're 1 point out of a playoff spot behind Calgary and Winnipeg. They have head-to-head matchups against Winnipeg and Calgary tomorrow and Monday, which is going to be huge for this team because, look, they win both of those. They're put themselves in a playoff spot. Seattle clinched a playoff spot last night in their second season in existence. So they, I guess, still could potentially move into the top three of the Pacific, but likely holding onto that first wild card spot. So that's pretty cool to see them do that. Vegas went to the Stanley Cup final their first year in existence, but the way the rules are with expansion teams, the NHL, makes it where a team can come into the league and be successful and have a chance at it very early on. Not like when the Predators first came in, but this weekend's going to be huge for the Preds on the road to try and punch their ticket, or at least have a chance going into the last week of the season to punch their ticket into the playoffs.
Yeah, Chase, and I think you laid it out there really nicely too. These young guys have stepped up so much, but I think also too something that we haven't been talking about enough. We've given, a lot of the conversation has been geared towards the Tommy Novaks and the Cody Glasses and Luke Evangelista, which they deserve all the credit in the world for the performances that they've put on night in and night out. But I think too, we need to recognize the level of in which UC Saros has been playing, not only this year and right now, but over the last 3 years. And I saw this on Twitter just now. Willie Donick retweeted it. It's by CJ Turtoo. I don't know how to spell say his last name, but he is a hockey analytics guy. And this is what he put out there on Twitter. He said, "No one has more goals saved above expectation in the last decade than UC Saros. He is on a legit Hall of Fame trajectory and no one talks about it. One of the most consistent, efficient goalies ever. This is the seventh season of being 5% better than the NHL average, which is 20 over 20. That's tied for the most ever by his age." I mean, he is another year should be in the conversation for the Vezina, Chase.
Oh yeah, well, and I mean, I think he would have been this year if the team at the throughout the year had been better.
Yeah, you look at Boston; he probably will win it over there. But I mean, he has to be, top three in the conversation. Because I look at what he's done. I mean, we talk and we kind of laugh of, oh my gosh, he owns the Hurricanes. But I mean, the one game he had there against one of the best teams in the NHL, 64 saves, and then to back it up with all of the other performances, the defensive core that he has, you know, in front of him that has been depleted, especially now without Roman Josi in there. I mean, he has been performing at such an incredible level, and we really shouldn't take it for granted just watching him play night in and night out.
Yeah, and what's crazy, you know, I walked on the plaza last night, saw Pekka Rinne's statue. They just put that up. And you go, I mean, look at his accolades, and he, you know, he holds all the goalie records, or he has held the goalie records for the Predators. And then I look at the guy that's in net right now, mm-hmm. and he's on track to be light years better, which is just crazy to even think about.
I mean, he's still so young too.
I know.
Right? I mean, and you talk about what do you need when you make a push in the postseason, and it's good goaltending. I mean, we talk about it in football. You need a good quarterback, right? Good goaltending can take you really far in the postseason. And, you know, also having that second option with Kevin Lankinen and him stepping up in some big moments this year and as of late, I mean, I don't count this team out for anything, and it's going to be a very, very exciting weekend to see, you know, what they can do against these teams that they're fighting to, you know, make it in there in that last wild card spot.
I'm curious too, let's just say, you know, they beat Winnipeg and Calgary this weekend.
Yeah.
And so that would put them, you know, they would put them in a spot to be in the playoffs. And then they close the season, what was supposed to be on Thursday the 13th against Minnesota, but they're now going to play back-to-backs mm-hmm. with Minnesota and Colorado, because that's a makeup game for Colorado. And so two questions come to mind. One, where are Minnesota and Colorado in the standings at that point? Can they do anything to improve their positions?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is no, then that's certainly in the favor of the Predators. And two, how do you treat those back-to-backs if you're still, like, you have to basically win both to punch your ticket to the playoffs? Do you go Saros back-to-back? Or does it give you an opportunity to play Saros and Lincoln and, you know, give one or the other on however or whatever order you want to do it in? But I think that's going to be interesting. But obviously, you got to get through Winnipeg and Calgary first.
Yeah, I definitely would not want to be the one making that decision, especially if those two games – Minnesota and Colorado come, it really comes down to the last game for the Nashville Predators. I'm happy that I don't have to make that decision. I'm sorry, John Hines, if you're listening. But it's a tough one, right? I mean, you have a guy like UC Saros who is just, you know, night in and night out. But if you believe that he's the difference maker and it does come down to one of those last games, I mean, Chase, you got to play him, because you can't be thinking about saving him for the playoffs if you can't get in. So, it's going to be fascinating. Yeah. I'm very, very excited for four games left and potentially more.
So, Nick, you talked to Cole Schneider, the captain of the Milwaukee Admirals, for Preds Insiders, correct? Is that what I understand?
Yes, I did.
So what did he have to – I know you have a clip here that you wanted to play, and Preds Insider is actually going to be tonight at 6 o'clock here on 102.5, the game, usually on Wednesdays, but – I know he had a comment on Tommy Novak, or Tommy Novechkin, as we like to call him, and the impact he's made.
I mean, when I first met Novi, I think it surprised me a little bit. But then once you got a game with him, you realize kid's special. And sometimes you think he's going to get crushed, and you're like, oh, no, I'm going to have to fight for him. But somehow he always gets away, and he's just a slippery guy. He sees ice so well. He's making plays everywhere.
So that's Cole Schneider, and you can hear more of that conversation tonight on Preds Insiders with the reporter and Robbie Stanley. So very cool stuff there. And Tommy Novak, I mean, that guy's so much fun to watch.
You mean Tommy Novechkin? The others are too.
Yeah, Tommy Novechkin.
Also,
yeah.
He just sounded exactly like Ryan Johansson.
He did.
You just played that clip, Nick, and I was like, whoa.
And he's from New York. He's nowhere near Vancouver, B.C.,
Yeah, right. They're completely opposite sides. Well, I mean,
go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I loved his comment on, you know, you think Tommy Novak's going to get crushed in there, and he finds a way to escape. He's a fast one.
Yeah, I did enjoy last night when I was at the arena and walking downstairs, and I heard a hey buddy, and I turned around and it was Ryan Johansson. So it was good to see him doing well and obviously getting healthy, and
yeah,
you know, hopefully have him back next year. But good running into Joey last night.
And PK Subban called the game on ESPN Plus.
Yes, he did. I thought I saw him last night.
Yeah, he called it on ESPN Plus, and I actually saw on Twitter he took a picture with Pekka's statue, which was kind of funny.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of former Preds in the – well, former slash current who are injured right now in the building.
Yeah, so very, very cool, and I'm sure they all got to catch up. But coming up next, we'll give you a Masters leaderboard update. Day two at Augusta is underway, and put a bow on things here on this Friday on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, the reporter Nick Keyser with you on this Friday. Day number two, round two at Augusta for the Masters. And Michelle, I don't know how much you watched yesterday. I sat in my office, did some work, was in and out of some meetings. But wherever I went, I had the Masters on my iPad and a couple of other screens because it's a tradition unlike any other. So it was a good day for me.
I followed a lot of the videos, you know, on social media and things like that. But I was running all over the place yesterday, but I followed a lot of it. And I'm going to have it as a little background noise in the house this afternoon.
So looking at round two, which is in progress, the leader right now at 11 under par total has shot 4 under today through 13 is Brooks Koepka. And he has a 4-stroke lead over Jason Day. So Jason Day, Victor Hovland, and John Rahm are all tied for second at 7 under for the tournament. Jason Day's through 9, 2 under today. Hovland and Rahm have yet to tee off for day number two. Colin Morikawa is tied for fifth with Sam Burns, Jordan Spieth, and Cameron Young. They're all at 5 under par. Morikawa is 2 under on the day through 7. Burns is 1 under on the day through 6. And Jordan Spieth, 2 under on the day through 5. So still early. Cameron Young has yet to tee off. Sam Bennett, Shane Lowry, Xander Schauffele, Adam Scott all tied for 9th at 4 under par. Sam Bennett, an amateur, at even today through 6. And then Lowry, Schauffele, and Scott have not teed off as of yet. Justin Rose, Justin Rose tied at 13 with Scotty Scheffler at 3 under. Phil Mickelson tied for 16th. He's 2 under on the tournament, 1 under today through 12. And got to look down the list to find some other heavy hitters. Justin Thomas, 2 under on the tournament, will tee off here in just a little bit. And looking for that guy that everybody seems to gravitate towards no matter what he does. Tiger Woods on down the list. Here we go. He hasn't teed off yet for today, but he's 2 over, tied for 50th. He is just above the cut line, which is projected to be 2 over right now. So Tiger looking to make the cut, hopefully play for the weekend. Sergio Garcia also at 2 over. Charles Schwartzel at 2 over. But Tiger will tee off here in just a little bit down in Augusta. Shot a 74 yesterday. I don't think he did all that bad considering, just everything he's gone through the last few years.
Yeah, and this could be he talked before the Masters teed off the other day. And a reporter asked him, you know, when you're walking the course, do you think that you'll be, you know, just in your head a little bit more thinking that this really could be my last go around here. And I think it is a very real thing this time, Chase.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, the thing with Tiger is I've looked at it as, you know, he with injuries and personal stuff, you know, he's come up short on a few things, but now he could, you know, eventually, I think he's got couple years before he can join the Champions Tour, the Legends Tour, or the Seniors Tour is what they used to call it. Now it's the Champions Tour. he could join that, and like I'd love to have him on that, you know, because I think he'd dominate. So Tiger's
sure.
done. I don't think Tiger's done, but maybe done with big tournaments like this. But who knows? We've seen guys that don't play the tour regularly. They join the Champions Tour and they still get, you know, he'll get an invite if he wanted to play the Masters. So you never know with Tiger Woods. But when you guys on Robbie and Rex Road were doing the Choice Is Yours the other day, and I forgot who asked the question, but a movie that you would like to see on on an athlete. I've seen documentaries, but I would love to see like an actual movie about Tiger.
There's
obviously a lot to hit there.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about all he accomplished in the sports world, what he did for, you know, the sport of golf itself, you know, what being one of the first African Americans really in the sport, and for him to become what he has, I mean, one of the greatest athletes of all time, and everything he has accomplished and his career and his comebacks, right, and all of his injuries and his personal life stories. I mean, he has, and you know, from start to finish, just a story that really hits all aspects of life, Chase. When you talk about, you know, rising up to the tip of your career, and then, you know, personal stuff being low, 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 and it would be fascinating. I have a feeling there probably will be a 30 for 30 someday, or maybe a.
Well, they did a documentary on, I think it was HBO.
I was going to say, or an HBO docuseries.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I highly recommend it, but it really focuses on his relationship with his dad. And, you know, unfortunately, some of his transgressions were kind of inherited. He learned it at a young age. And so that was really, and not a lot of people knew that, but that was fascinating. To see that. And then obviously he started playing golf when he was like 3.
Yeah, which is insane.
And I mean, he was natural, you know, a natural then, and it just, his father pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. And, you know, you can make the argument that had he not done that, he wouldn't be Tiger Woods, you know, as we know him. But, it's just, you know, I think stories like that are interesting because we only see the surface and don't see, you know, everything that goes with it. But, you know, you talk about greatest athletes of all time. Tiger has to be up there. So, you know, I would put Serena Williams, obviously Michael Jordan, LeBron James in that conversation. But, you know, Tiger, with what he changed a sport. He transcended the sport.
I think the question is, or we've had this discussion, a July discussion of most dominant athlete. Right. When you talk about most dominant athlete, I think you can put Tiger in there. I think you can put Serena Williams in there, Michael Jordan, right? People who became the face of the sport, right? It wasn't the NBA promoting Michael Jordan. It was Michael Jordan promoting the NBA. It wasn't the PGA or the Masters promoting Tiger Woods. It was Tiger Woods promoting those events, right? You change the sport and you open the audience to the sport, and you make a difference in every aspect. So I think, you know, all of those athletes, Tiger 100%, you put him in that conversation.
That will do it for us. It's been a fun week. Enjoyed the participation and all the banter with all of you, but don't go anywhere. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming up next, and you gotta know they're gonna talk about those pesky Predators. Willie will also have his playoff watch coming up in just a few minutes. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Love everyone. We'll be back Monday starting at 9 here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.